Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Chrissy Hill. Chrissy, thank you so much for joining me here today, Chrissy. Thank you.
It is such a pleasure to be on Cassie and to be the second half of that title today. It's a great way to go into the weekend.
Well, you are a pretty legit anchor in sports terms to help complete this episode. Chrissy, I love Cassie and Chrissy. That's a pretty great combo right there.
It sounds like a Nickelodeon show or something, doesn't it?
Right. But we met, a lot of my guests I meet for the first time from LinkedIn and reach out to them, but we didn't meet that way. We met at Consensus. And first of all,
IRL,
like old school, exactly. Like the Gen Xers that we are, we met in real life first. And Chrissy, just a brief intro of you. You are CLO and interim COO of Parity Technologies, a company out there that's building in Web3. But I think it's perfect that we met at Consensus. It was my first Web3 blockchain focus conference, and I was very, very much overwhelmed in some ways, but I learned so much from that event. So
Consensus is a fantastic event, and it brings so many people together. Actually, it was so welcoming that I brought my 8-year-old this year. Because I was speaking, and it was her half term from school, here in the UK. And my sister came and met us in Austin, and she got to go around to every single booth. She got so much swag. She got interviewed. Everybody was so happy for her to be there. So having had such a great experience the year before and it being so welcoming, I felt like, well, if this is going to be our first Web3 conference at 8 years old, well, it's the only one to pick is Consensus.
Yeah, it's great. I'm very lucky that it's in my backyard. I'm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I will say I've definitely gone to plenty of legal-focused conferences. I've even gone to old-school Comic-Cons and anime conferences and stuff like that, fountain pen conferences. But
Fountain pens,
of all things. But Consensus, sensory overload. I mean, there definitely was shiny, bright, very engaging booths, but nearly overwhelming at times. But, and that we met in 2023, and yes. That is the conference, that is the event where I really took away AI is about to be the big thing that everyone's talking about, because that's what everyone was talking about at that conference.
Absolutely. And I think I had a similar realization as you, because having joined the blockchain industry in January 2022 and then going to that Consensus in 2023, it was really the first time I had been in the industry and seen how quickly the conversation moved firsthand. And yeah, it definitely has only picked up in pace and also visibility since then. And we've been talking about AI and blockchain, the perfect power couple.
They're a power couple. I think of them as yin and yang. They're different, but complement each other very well. And great balance is really so important. But I talk a lot about AI, but I'm a firm believer, and I've talked about this on LinkedIn and on my other episodes of my podcast, that people are out there building in Web3, like legitimately building, and it may not be touching all of our legal bubbles that we have. But, and you're a perfect example of that, Chrissy. You are working for a Web3 company that's like centrally in the mix of a decentralized world, like very much involved in that. So I'd love for you, Chrissy, to talk a little bit about Parity Technologies, just so the audience realizes Web3 builders are still out there building.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of amazing builders out there who are thinking of so many tools that will benefit our everyday life that we may not even know are there, but they still are making things go. And how I always try to orient parity in the world to people who may not be from the Web3 world is I always ask them to visualize the New York subway system or the London Tube, whatever it may be, and think about the tracks, the trains, the tunnels. They're all the same. They take you to many different places throughout the city, but it's the same tracks, trains, and tunnels. And so what parity builds is the blockchain equivalent of those tracks, trains, and tunnels for Polkadot. And so just like you can go down the New York subway and you can end up in Brooklyn, or you can end up in the Upper West Side or Broadway. So too can you take this blockchain infrastructure to many different use cases of blockchain. The first thing many people think of when they think of blockchain is crypto, but that's but one use case. NFTs are another use case. Real world assets, the tokenization of those real world assets, another use case. Voting, health records, ethical commodities, identity, digital identity. There's just, I could go on. But the point is, we're building the infrastructure that takes you there.
Now, isn't it right that you mentioned a few other chains? You mentioned Bitcoin, which is its own blockchain protocol. There's Ethereum, which is a different blockchain protocol. And Parity, of course, has your own blockchain protocol, correct? But within Parity, you're also connecting those disparate blockchains so they can communicate together. Is that right?
Absolutely. So if you believe in Polkadot, then you believe in interoperability. And we very much are not tribalistic. We are about connecting different chains. And we do that through things called trustless bridges. Now, I am not an engineer. And, you know, I have taken some programming lessons and launched one web app, but I am just so pitiful with my coding skills, it's not even worthwhile trying to explain the technological aspects of that. There are people who are far more qualified that I work with who could do it beautifully. But I just see it as being able to transfer things, tokens, for instance, between the different protocols out there so they can talk to each other. So information value can be exchanged. And that can take place between Ethereum and Polkadot, for instance, and other chains as well. And that's something that interoperability is a fundamental tenet of Polkadot, actually, and that lack of tribalism is very important to us.
I love that. And I was thinking about it last night. I've been a big fan. I've been intrigued by blockchain for a while. My family, I try to explain blockchain to them and they don't get it. And they'll randomly ask me, how's my chain gang going, to make fun of me. But there are two things that I think it's worth highlighting, especially if this, you know, the audience isn't as aware of the blockchain technology. I think the tribalism you mentioned is a very relevant point to make, because there are people who are call themselves Bitcoin maxis, and then there are people who are consider themselves Ethereum maxis, and it's kind of like the sharks and the jets from West Side Story. There is a little bit of competition there, right?
Yes, and I had a very, very difficult experience in my hometown of South Carolina with some maxis who I won't mention what protocol, but who definitely told me I didn't understand blockchain because I wasn't involved with what they were doing. And I made the statement that there were many different use cases for blockchain, and actually the industry is really comparatively so small that infighting is not really anything that's going to drive user adoption and knowledge about what we are building, which could really transform lives. And so it was counterproductive to be exclusive like that, because one of the fundamental tenets of Web3, which, by the way, the founder of Polkadot is the man who is credited with coining the term Web3, Dr. Gavin Wood. But, you know, it's actually really near and dear to our hearts that inclusivity is, again, something we should be striving for, not just in technology, but the way we interact. And to be such a maxi about a protocol to the exclusion of others is, it's hypocritical, really. And I know that's controversial to say it to many, but I'll say it because I believe it. And it's something I've actively worked towards, ensuring that feeling of inclusivity I try to in everything I do, whether it's professional or personal.
I love that. And I think realistically, you know, if you're thinking big picture, you have to have that flexibility. People like having their choices. We're in a world of streaming. We want to be able to do what we want to do. And if you want to engage in something that's on a different chain, being able to have that bridge is available. And that's what I was thinking last night. I love that you made the subway reference to an analogy for blockchain, because I was thinking that based off of what I read of what Polkadot and Parity is doing, kind of like Wreck-It Ralph, where the different video games are the different chains, but then now there's a mechanism where they can engage with each other. And that I think is useful in the broader case of the use of maybe Web3, where we've talked about people buying an asset in this game that could then be used in another game. And so Wreck-It Ralph is where my brain went, but it's a very similar, it's nearly like Grand Central Station that you've developed with your protocol and your bridges.
It's a very exciting place to work. And I think we have a great vision for what's next as well. And just want to be part of building the digital economy that's coming. Because one of the things I always talk about, I mentioned my 8-year-old earlier, is my girls are 13 and 8. And in England, can't tell from my accent that I've lived in England for the last 22 years, but I have. And if you heard them speak, they certainly sound like from here. But in England, in London in particular, I mean, we were really locked down for a good portion of 2020 and 2021, to the point where you could only go out of your house for 30 minutes sometimes in a day. And there were restrictions on, excuse me, who you could interact with. There are these concepts of bubbles, right? So many of my children's friends were isolated from each other because they didn't live close together. You couldn't travel. They weren't part of a bubble. And so they continued their friendships and interacted and played online. So they're so comfortable with a virtual identity. I mean, they play Roblox all the time. And they're really comfortable with that concept of the digital exchange of goods and services and that concept of a virtual world. And it's coming, regardless of what we do to try to put barriers in place to stop it. It's coming. And so we need to embrace it and make sure that any regulation and laws that we put in place are good and promote innovation and promote a really positive result. Because if those rules and regulations aren't well thought out, they will stifle innovation. And people will find other places to build technology that could ultimately be hugely beneficial. So I think there's a real onus on all the adults in the room. And you may define that differently, but depending upon where you're at in the world, is to just see that this is the future and we need to make room for it and support it in a really positive and constructive way.
Well, and I know from our prep call, we talked about how important education is. And I think that's true in any emerging technology. That's something I feel very passionately about in the context of AI. And also just like blockchain education is needed in a certain way, maybe, for awareness. You hinted at this, I know, in our conversation yesterday, and I didn't dig into it too much, but I've heard other people say, we'll know that blockchain is really integrated when we stop talking about blockchain. And that makes me think of, you know, maybe 10 years ago, in my experience working in e-discovery and technology in the legal world, Internet of Things was the topic du jour, like AI is now. Everyone was talking about Internet of Things, Internet of Things, Internet of Things. As professionals, we don't talk about it anymore. It's out there. It's definitely out there. Everything has metadata now because of the Internet of Things. I think that that could be the case. I think that those are valid points to make, that education is important, but hopefully it'll get so integrated that it's running seamlessly behind the scenes, right?
Absolutely. It's just like, you know, I pick up my phone. I don't really want to know how it works. I just want it to work.
Yeah.
I want it to connect me to whomever in the world, wherever they are, immediately via WhatsApp or Telegram or Signal or, you know, whatever you're using, Discord. I want to be able to use my apps and buy or interact or play a game how I want to. I don't want to think about what's making it run. And that's because I am just looking at the usability of it and how it is improving my day-to-day life. I'm curious, and so I do want to know how things work, but I wouldn't blame anyone else who didn't look at a phone and go, oh, I wonder what minerals were used to actually construct this. But that is actually, it goes into an interesting use case for blockchain, which is, you know, if you can track where things have been shipped from, where they've been produced, who's worked on them, how much CO2 was used in that process, and you were able to put a label on the back of your phone, much like the ingredients in food that we're also used to seeing. And it could say, well, it has this much CO2 that went into the production. You know, the metal in it came from X, Y, and Z country. It was shipped however many tens of thousands of miles, et cetera, et cetera. It could help inform your choices to purchase that item, because you could have more ethical options available to you if you wanted. And blockchain would enable that kind of power over your choices that you make in your day-to-day life. And that's a relatively straightforward thing to do if we were to devote time and energy to it. And I know people who are setting up businesses in order to focus on that. And I think that's super cool because it's putting the power back in our hands.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. Another one that I think is very relatable to a broad consumer base is maybe designer bags or designer fashion items. I believe that Italy was playing around with the idea of using blockchain technology to track provenance to protect against counterfeit goods. So I think, you know, and then when you add in maybe NFC technology, where there could be ways to not only prove that what you have is a real designer purse or designer good, you might also have a chip that could also share details about it. Or someone likes your purse, you know, they could scan the chip and you get more information, right? There's a lot of information that can be available. But
and we just, it's at our fingertips, really. We just need, I think, to find ways to make it less opaque for people. Mm-hmm. I think technology can be very intimidating to many. And people kind of switch off because they find it a little scary. And I think, again, that's another good reason, going back to one of your points, which is, you know, you don't really need to understand how it works. You just need to know what it does for you. And hopefully we can find more ways to make people see, not make people see, but allow people to see the potential.
And I think one aspect of that is maybe the benefit of blockchain technology is not only does it create a ledger that is immutable, it can't be changed, but there's also technology that can sit on top of it, like smart contracts. And really, a smart contract You could probably explain this much better than me, but something that a smart contract is, it's in essence code that executes terms of a contract that you would negotiate. So, you know, the life cycle of a contract, two parties have a meeting of the minds and they agree to terms and scope of a contract. And then there are things that follow from that. So maybe payment terms or termination, things like that. And that's usually managed by people, and there's room for error for that for multiple reasons. But the beauty of a smart contract is it's like saying, well, we're going to take the management of overseeing the terms of that contract in software and have it run, you know, autonomously. So that's another benefit to blockchain technology.
Absolutely. And if we're going to start geeking out on the legal aspects.
Sorry.
No, I love it. I think I definitely want to go there because, of course, this is what we do, right? I always point out to people, and this audience may appreciate this more than others, that the genesis of blockchain technology was actually a bunch of lawyers wanting to have their court documents time and date stamped in a way that could not be tampered with. This is actually footnoted in the Bitcoin white paper. I believe it's like footnote 6. And it's like Haber and Stornetta. It was their research. And it was to time and date stamp documents. And so really, you can kind of thank lawyers for the genesis of this idea. And then, of course, it moved on from there. Merkle trees were added a couple years later. And then 2008. So I think that was about in the 90s. And then in 2008 was, you know, Satoshi Nakamoto and the white paper and all of that. So things evolved significantly in that time. But certainly, if we get beyond the legal roots of this technology and we start to get into how it can be really helpful on a day-to-day basis, smart contracts are a great example. Because if you kind of think of, I always think of it as if then. If this happens, then the outcome will be X. And that is code that can, you know, effectively make that if-then statement actionable. Now, of course, people will always need to be part of this equation, in my opinion, because sadly, humans do not exist without conflict, right? That it is just not possible for humans to exist without some sort of conflict. So when things go wrong, there needs to be the ability to interpret some provisions. You need to have people who can look at narratives that overlay the smart contract in order to determine whether or not the intent of the parties was actually reflected by the outcome that was generated by the code. So
This is a question I've long had, and no one's been able to answer this for me. So, Chrissy, okay. I hope you can.
I don't know.
So, let's say two parties are negotiating a contract, and they decide they want it memorialized for execution. You know, term of contract execution via smart contract. How does that work? From a, like, you go and engage someone to write that code. Does one person bring their own coder? Do they have a neutral party develop that and then they both agree to it? Or how is that translation from the legal understanding to the code done, knowing that there are two parties that, you know, are not the same party?
Gina, funnily enough, I have never been in a negotiation like that ever. Because I work for the company where the engineers sit who build.
Right.
And it has, I mean, and they build smart contracts all the time. But as part of my job with Imperity, I'm more looking at the licensing of the code. Like, is it GPL3 or Mozilla or Apache? So this copyright. Copy left concept, and more with like relationships with people who need something. They need access to Polkadot,
right?
So, for whatever
that makes sense,
maybe. Yeah. So I actually haven't sat down and built one in a, you know, representative type situation. It would be interesting to do it.
Yeah. And I'm just, you know, what's the privilege implications there? You know, it's just like that. So people who, attorneys who don't think blockchain has got interesting legal issues, they not dug into it enough. I think there are there's some interesting concepts, but smart chains could also be used in NIL rights, name, image, likeness rights are going to probably be kind of a new frontier because of generative AI. The passing of James Earl Jones, I think, is really going to be seen as prime example of that. And that's something that can be managed by blockchain and smart contracts. There are certain rights that flow for a certain amount of time. Just makes sense, Chrissy, to me at least.
It does. And I think going back to the AI point, also blockchain establishing guardrails for AI, especially in relation to intellectual property, copyright. You can, again, monitor what is being used and then follow that through to see if any rights have been impacted, and then follow on from that as to what do you do if those rights have been impacted. And that can be by putting in place some clever mechanisms that emerging tech has given us. It's an exciting space, and I think it really is only limited by our imagination. And I always think about Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX, and the U.S. attorney in that case said, whatever else, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but whatever else you think about crypto, blockchain, whatever it may be, know that the technology might be new, the terms might be new, but what those people did in that case was as old as time, and that was lie, cheat, and steal. And that was, I believe, in instructions to people about how to view the facts and to not be intimidated by the fact that it was technology, not to get lost in that. But I do want to encourage the audience to embrace all emerging tech in that spirit, and that it's like anything else, can be misused by bad actors. And there are so many positive uses for the technology that can really benefit people, enforce their legal rights, help them to put in place better conflict resolution mechanisms, and also allow them to make some choices in their representation that wouldn't be possible without the emerging tech. So I think your audience, probably because they're more open to AI in the first place, is more inclined to this. But I think we should all be chatting to those of our friends and colleagues and family who maybe don't have that view, to try to make them feel comfortable to embrace emerging tech in all its forms.
You know, and I think ultimately it's a tool. And I think it's the same argument or discussion point for AI in many ways. Maybe even, you know, you look at the discussions going on right now, whether or not AI generated content is copyrighted by IP or not. You know, and I think at the end of the day, considering these as tools and not like some magic thing in a box that has its own free will, I think that's important. And similarly, blockchain, a lot of people think of it as the crypto fraud tool. And at the end of the day, people who commit crimes are going to commit crimes. However, they're just going to, if there's a tool that can make them do it better, faster, more effective, they're going to leverage it. So
absolutely. And I think also on that, one of the things I always point out is that the thing about crypto, if we get into it, and any digital asset, is it has a digital fingerprint that can be traced. Actually, the tool that money launderers use the most is the US dollar. And the second most used tool is property, real estate. And when you think about cash, sure, it has a serial number, but once you put it into a bag or a suitcase, it's gone. You can never trace it again, really. Real estate is a bit more traceable, but again, there's lots of corporations behind a lot of this, these real estate transactions. So they can be harder to track down than digital assets. And if you look into the field of digital asset recovery and how law enforcement is working with a lot of different players within the blockchain space, and it's law enforcement all over the world, the sheer amount of digital assets that have been recovered is astounding as compared to other methods of criminal activity.
Because it's traceable, right? I mean, the wallet is public. It is on chain. So,
and you can follow it. I mean, of course, then, you know, who's behind the IP address, pseudo, and, you know, are they anonymous? Is it pseudo anonymous? But that's still, it's a fingerprint that can be traced and it can't be changed.
Mm-mm. No. So be careful what you put on your wallet. If you don't want the world, your public wallet, at least, you, or, you know, if it's associated with an ENS or something in your name, I mean, I know I have that. So I'm not going to be doing anything shady with that wallet. That's for sure.
Cassie and Cassie talk money laundering.
I know.
Right? As we should.
Yeah.
You know, it's our job to get ahead of some of these issues and close loopholes, because there's always loopholes in everything. Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's always points of failure. And I think that's one thing that blockchain technology tries to prevent, right? Because it's creating kind of that immutable ledger, and it has proof of stake or proof of work to validate that what's put on the ledger is accurate, to prevent fraud from that perspective. But there's still always room for failure, room for mistakes. You know, you see it sometimes in smart contracts, if the code isn't correct. And I think that's where people like you and I, we may not be fully entrenched in the code, but we know at a high level that mistakes happen, points of failure happen, there can be risk. How do you deal with that on the back end? And then how do you try to mitigate that going forward? And I think, to me, that's what's so fascinating about a lot of this technology. There is some very idealized, you know, utopian views to some of these technologies, even blockchain, but it's like, you can't tell me there's no way some of these things could happen. And of course they can. So I think that's where the value that we bring to the table, we're not necessarily the ones that have developed these wonderful technologies. We can appreciate it and see the value of it, and also say, let's mitigate where we can, let's minimize risk where we can. And
I call it being a critical friend and a trusted advisor. Mm-hmm. And I think a combination of those two things, those of us in the legal and compliance profession, can bring a lot to the table and help pave the way so there are no issues in the future, and also help deal with any issues that might arise. And what I love about it, and what brought me to this space, is that it's the frontier of law and regulation. And throughout my career, that's been the golden thread, that it's connected everything that I've looked to do in my professional life. Actually striking out and trying to find the frontier generally has also led me in my personal life to that concept of striking out is really fundamental to how I've lived and how I've worked. And so that is what attracted me to Web3 and emerging tech, because I thought, gosh, as a lawyer, you have the ability to help shape this almost from the outset. How many times in your life do you get that opportunity? So take it. Who knows how it's going to go, but hey, it'll never be boring. And all I'll say is, be careful what you wish for.
This is true. Now, Chrissy, we're kind of at the tail end of our conversation. We could talk a very long time, I feel like. I would love for you maybe to talk a little bit about you're at a very unique crossroads of legal, compliance, regulation, working in-house. And it can sometimes be fatiguing trying to stay on top of all of the technology out there. So do you have any words of wisdom generally for a broader legal audience of, I'm aware that I kind of need to be on top, this stuff is coming down the pipeline, how do I manage that? There's a lot of change out there. How do I manage that? What advice would you give to the audience?
I would say that LinkedIn is a fantastic resource. We actually recommend for any new joiners on our team certain people in jurisdictions around the world who we think really have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in their jurisdiction. Because it is very true that it is almost impossible to keep up with what's going on worldwide. And different jurisdictions are approaching topics slightly differently. There's nuances. Even, for instance, with MiCA in Europe, it's being enacted in slightly different ways in the different member states. And it's happening now. And all the consultation papers are going out now. So you really have to find those voices. I would encourage LinkedIn over X, really, unless you're wanting to go down the rabbit hole of diving into emerging tech and X. I think more intermediate to advanced. But if you're a beginner, LinkedIn. Also, there's some fantastic podcasts out there. I mean, Cassie Ann. And
thank you.
There are a few others. Again, I can provide you with some resources if you want to see what we recommend after, and happy to share. Also within Polkadot, there is a gentleman named Gautam Dameja who does a podcast called Block Shots. And in 5 minutes, he takes really difficult blockchain related concepts and distills them down into these little segments that you can just, you know, listen to 10 and you've learned about 10 topics in 50 minutes. And suddenly, oh, you've got a much better understanding of what's going on, of course, in layperson's terms. So don't try to keep up with everything on your own. That way madness lies. But few carefully selected and curated individuals can really be once a week what you listen to or read to just keep your finger on the pulse or become one yourself, right? But I would say if you want to become one yourself, definitely pick your area of focus and don't try to cover too much.
I think that's absolutely right. The hypervigilance and hyperfatigue, it can be overwhelming. There's too much going on. You can't
24/7, right?
You can't know it all.
You can't.
So,
and anybody who says they're an expert or anyone who says that they're following all of it, that is a red flag. Run the other way, because it is literally impossible for a human to keep up with everything that's going on.
We can't.
Every day.
We can't, not until we have AI fully integrated into our person and we're a cyborg, but maybe we're not too far away from that. Who knows? But
neural implants.
Maybe, yes. Hey, you know, those brainwaves are protected privacy, you know, content in Colorado. So
that is true. Interesting.
So again, another area of the legal world is just
changing discussion, right?
Well, and I think like you can't be an attorney and not really start. It is going to be increasingly difficult to be an effective attorney and not really kind of dig into technology. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it is essential. Even if it is just to provide yourself with a competitive advantage. So to be able to understand the technology and to be able to translate that for judges, for juries, for your clients, for yourself, or into contracts, will still give you a competitive advantage over many people. It's also an absolutely fascinating area to work in, where you're trying to make analogies to all these different precedents and actually see how far behind the law is, really, in terms of innovation and where things need to move on. And then I think from a personal perspective, the kind of seasoning it can bring to your life and the way it can improve how you draft, how you communicate with people, your work product. Also, the confidence it gives you in your work product not changing. It's really fundamental, actually, I think, and will become even more so in the future.
Well, I agree. Chrissy, Thank you so much for joining today. Such a great kickoff to my third season of this podcast. I couldn't think of a better person to start it with. Talking about really the tech out there that I think is going to be the hot tech in 2025. I'm making that prediction now.
Right. I'm in with you on that prediction.
Yeah. That's yeah. So, well, I've learned so much, Chrissy. So thank you again for joining. I know I've learned a lot. I know my audience has as well. And for my audience, thank you all for joining. And we look forward to having you join the next episode of Cassie and...